What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Pursuit of Enhancement podcast. My name is Peter Ledwidge, and I'm your host. Each episode, I sit down to talk in depth with guests that push the boundaries of conventional living, driven by the singular pursuit of being on an unrelenting quest to continually expand the horizons of their body, mind, and spirit. The aim is to learn more about them and from them, their story, the work they are doing, the highs, the lows, the triumphs, the heartaches, and everything in between. I hope that through these stories, you'll find the courage to go out and push your own boundaries, whatever that may look like to you. Your story has just as much value as any guest on this podcast. This week, I'm grateful to be joined from California by Jedi Azuma, creator of the Rising Man movement and host of the Rising Man podcast. Millions of men feel a deep yearning to serve but don't know how to start. Through his work, Jedi offers his wisdom on hearing the subtle messages and tapping into our highest vision. Open relating and transparent sharing are essential elements to the Rising Man movement. Finding the courage to communicate our deepest desires, fears, and emotions often leads to huge breakthroughs. Jedi has been deeply involved in this area of men's work for over a decade, and I'm delighted to get the chance to glean some wisdom from him and to find out more about him and his work. In our conversation, we'll talk about what is men's work, initiation from boyhood to manhood, his journey through repression of self and substance abuse, elder mentorship. We talk about vision questing, incorporating indigenous practices and rites of passage, breaking generational cycles and reconciling relationships. And we also talk about his core parenting values to raise conscious children. So let's jump right into today's episode with Jedi Azuma. So welcome to the podcast, Jedi.
Honored to be here, my brother. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. And yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. And we've all got busy lives and busy schedules. So really appreciate your time today.
That's right, man. We podcasters, we got to stick together and take care of our own. So happy to be here, man.
That's it. Fit it in where we can. Yep. Yeah. And so, yeah, one of the main things I always like to do is to sort of go back into the story of the person themselves. And then sort of from there, you always get an understanding of the work that they're doing. Because the two are always obviously very closely related. But firstly, I just wanted to get a sort of a brief definition from you, because the term men's work has become, I suppose, more in the mainstream now, or maybe it's just that the circles that we run in. So for somebody that hasn't heard it before, maybe you could explain what that term means and to you in particular.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. No one has actually asked me that question. I've asked other people that question because I find that in this field, words like men's work and empowerment and leadership, they often become overused and saturated to the point where we don't really know what it means. So truthfully, I think everyone has a different definition of what men's work is. I think what everyone's talking about is the process of becoming the man that we always wanted to be. And everybody's work looks different. So when we say men's work, to me, I visualize it as stepping into the arena of facing off with the most challenging aspects of ourselves, the most challenging parts of our ego, the most challenging parts of our traumas, most challenging parts of our conditionings, and squaring off with it in a way where we take it on so that we can shift it and change it. And so practically what that looks like is stepping into a space where you're finally seen for the first time, where you get metaphorically and sometimes literally naked in front of other people who won't judge you for those things, but will reveal to you how you've been showing up, so that once you see that and you accept it, then you can move forward from there. So I think that a lot of ways of looking at, I think of it as growing up, maturing. It's all about initiation, being initiated from boyhood into manhood. Which is not necessarily an overnight process. It's not a one-time event. It's a constant becoming of a man is what I believe it to be.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you for that. Yeah, and one of the things that really sort of stood out as you were saying that is that sort of having that you know, that free space to open up and without judgment, because sometimes, you know, there can be very much that stigma of, well, if you open up to other people, and I think mainly, I suppose, especially amongst guys, there can be feeling that if, you know, we're not allowed to be vulnerable, or we're not allowed to say we have these fears and doubts and insecurities, but really, at the end of the day, everybody has them, but you just need that safe space to express them.
Absolutely, man. Well, I mean, that's the underwriting belief, is that I'm different than you, that my dark places within me, or the things that I've done in my past, are so unique from you or any other man, that if anyone saw them, I would be kicked out of the tribe. I wouldn't belong anymore. And as soon as one man has the courage to say, I've jerked off to animal porn, I was abused by my father, I was, you know, I murdered somebody, like real stuff that happens in this, on this planet. You they're surprised just to see how many other people share that experience or can relate to it in some way. I mean, I threw out some of the heavy hitters. I've heard all of those things, by the way. I've heard men share every single one of those things, and in a space where you can create that sense of confidentiality, the sense of which provides security and safety, I can say this and not have to be the only one to hold it, knowing that I won't be judged and that it'll be contained in the space. It's, to me, that's the definition of freedom, which is what every man needs.
Incredible. And from that, as I said at the start, I want to go back into your journey, and obviously, because when you hear somebody's journey, it makes it clear, because sometimes from the outside, you know, somebody could see you, but they don't know, well, why are you doing this particular work? But I'm sure there's a very profound reason for that. So maybe you could give us some insight on that.
Yeah, well, I'll give you the short of it, and then you can tell me where you want to go. The synopsis of my childhood was the pursuit of perfection. I had nearly perfect marks in school. I was a very academic, smart kid, performed really well in all of my scholastic endeavors, and I was also a really good athlete. I wasn't the top of the heap in either of those categories, but I was very close, and so I performed really well. So I got a lot of validation and approval from my parents, from my coaches, my teachers. And I was also just a very nice kid. It was very pleasant. You know, I didn't, never ruffled feathers. I very much who I was truly at my core. But I learned that that got me a certain result. That got me approval, affection, love from other people. So in confronting situations, uncomfortable situations, conflicts, I would lean on my friendliness, my people pleasing, wanting to make people happy, because conflict made me so uncomfortable. Now, what that resulted in was me becoming a shapeshifter, a chameleon of sorts. I was always modifying, adjusting, amending who I am and what was really true to me to make peace with the people around me. And it was a great survival tactic, except for the fact that I wasn't really expressing what was true deep down. Because deep down, I was hurting. I was experiencing anger and rage. And I learned from some experiences that that was bad, that that was dangerous, that that scared people around me. And so I contained it. And just like I think most humans do, especially men, we contain our anger and our rage because oftentimes when we express it, it scares people or there's significant consequences for it. So I did that up until my early 20s when I couldn't contain it anymore. There was such a backlog of unexpressed emotion that I started to use substances to dampen it, which is naturally, it's the next best thing. If I can't physically hold it down anymore, if the beast is getting so big that I can't restrict it or confine it with my own energy, then let me use a substance that will help me to numb it, that'll sedate it, that will, you know, hit it with a tranquilizer, basically. So I was smoking a lot of marijuana. I was smoking a lot of cigarettes. I was having experiences that brought me joy in a moment, but that long-term left me feeling pretty empty. And that was around, that was from the ages of like 22 to 25. By the time I was getting close to my 25th birthday, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I had a great job. I was single. I was hanging out in the city. I had a lot of friends living in New York, beautiful community, really awesome experiences. But I had no idea what my life was for, and I had no clue of where to go next. I needed elder men in my life. And this is really where that's part of the story comes in. I don't know why, but it was really clear to me that I looked around and all the other guys that I was spending time with were my age.
Yeah.
And we were all trying to figure out the same thing. What do we do now? You know, what do we do with all this experience we have, these skills that we're starting to develop, but nothing to ground it. No real masculinity to ground it. So I went in search of it. I traveled 3,000 miles across the US with a backpack and wandered around for 4 months looking for elder mentorship. And I found it here in California. And that really opened up the field for me to two worlds. Number one, men's work, I guess you can call it that. For me, it's men's teams. And then the other side of that was Vision Quest and indigenous practices of initiation and rites of passage. And so that's really been the last 7 years for me, has been blending those worlds together, learning from teachers, mentors, and just being in the arena with other men.
Yeah, amazing journey. Yes, and as you say there, when you were with you know, your other peers all trying to figure it out, and then you know, one of you would have been looking like you would have been looking to one person in the group to sort of to sort of lead everybody else, but obviously that's not the healthy sort of mentorship that you needed.
No, because none of us really knew. Frankly, I'm still figuring a lot of things out, man. I'm a husband of 5 years. I'm a father of four to two kids now. Father of 4 years to two children. And man, it's that's one thing I've learned, is that I'm never going to know exactly what I'm doing. I need to know where I'm directing my arrow today. And as long as I can pull back that bow and fire that arrow today to the best of my ability, then tomorrow it might look different. A month from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, it might look different, but the commitment to wake up and keep pursuing towards that true north every day is the simplest, most poetic thing that a man can do.
Yeah.
And it for me, it's removed a lot of the frustration that I was experiencing as that young man of like, what do I do? What is my life for? How do I make an impact in this world? You know, that coming out of that night's journey and more into the building, establishing a foundation.
Incredible. Because that was a question that I sort of had, and you've sort of brought it up now, is that you know, a lot of your work is sort of like helping you know, men and guys to find their purpose and to find their passion. And I think sometimes there can be it can either be a polarizing or it can also be a confusing term, because like finding your passion or your purpose, I think some people think they have to attach it to, you know, some big, you know, changing the world event or some big movement that they had have to be a part of. But like finding your passion, as you say, can be just finding out what direction you want to point your arrow in, and living, you know, with intention every day. And living with intention can just be, you know, doing your movement practice or doing your breath work practice every day and showing up as the best person that you can be, which I think I have now come to that understanding with, you know, that term, you know, living a life of passion and purpose. Because that was something that I wrestled with. That term sort of took me a while to wrestle with for. Yeah,
and I can completely relate to that. I wrestled with that for a while, and I just want to acknowledge how uncomfortable and painful of a journey that can be. I don't know how other people experience it, but I thought that finding my passion and my purpose in life was going to be this heavenly, you know, pearly gates, clouds parting, sun shining through kind of moment. I've had a couple of those, but the majority of that journey was very uncomfortable. It was very dark at times. It was very lonely at times and painful. And, you know, there's all these kind of cliches out there, but the most beautiful things are created under the greatest pressure. You know, that's one way of looking at it. You know, you think about diamonds and obsidian stones and all these precious gems that we cherish. They're all created under intense amounts of heat and pressure. So there's something to that. There's a reason why for pretty much ever since the origin of humans, especially civilized humans who worked together, we have been creating ordeals for essentially teenagers when they're ready to move from boyhood to manhood, to show them how unforgiving and how harsh the world can be. Because if you don't prepare, if you're not prepared for that, then you step out into the world, it's like, boom, time to make money, time to pay rent, time to pay your taxes, time to save up for a mortgage. And it's like, well, how the heck do I do this? Of course, this generation of humans, especially men, are crumbling. because we've been sent out into the jungle with absolutely no preparation, no tools, nothing to fend with. It's like, all right, throwing an infant into the deep end, which you could say that there's some value in that, but you're going to lose some infants along the way if we keep initiating kids.
Yeah, for sure.
Way. So yeah, man, it's that's why I do the work that I do, because I believe that if we prepare our boys to become the men that they're capable of, the men that they want to be, then everyone will be better served for that. All of us will. And they still have to go through the ordeal. I don't want to protect or prevent any of the discomfort that they need. I won't rob a boy or a man of his hard lessons, but I will provide him a context in which he can get clear on what his life is for.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, because as you say there about like not robbing them of the ordeal, because like we can always learn from other people's, you know, quote unquote, mistakes, or, you know, you hear about in business, people say, well, you know, I had a mentor and I just learned from their mistakes. But at the same time, we still have to make our own mistakes so we can make the lessons, because then, you know, it creates those neural pathways in the brain, like, you know, that, you know, the primal brain that we have is like, you know, you go one way and you're like, oh, well, I remember there was a saber-toothed tiger down there, so I won't go this way tomorrow. Because if you don't have that sort of visceral and physical experience, you're not going to have, you know, create those memories sort of in your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, man. And something else you were saying really quickly about passion and finding purpose. Like you said, there's a word that comes up for me, significance. For some reason, maybe it's just the superhero era that we live through, that we imagine we got to be a hero on a big stage with thousands of people praising us for our efforts and our endeavors. I remember when I was at the bottom of my bottom, I had to realize that with no clarity on what my life was for, starting from a base level, I was exchanging gases with the environment, and I was putting carbon dioxide out into the air that was feeding plants and trees, and I was receiving oxygen back. So if you're alive and you're taking in breath into your body, then you're being of service already. Sometimes we just don't see it. And when I started to see that, I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Could it be this simple? And then I went into that world a little bit of the emptiness and studied Buddhism and not being so attached to things, and realized that non-attachment is useful, but we don't always have to be unattached to having a great impact. We can be engaged with that process too. But starting from a base level, for me, I think a lot of folks, when they were at the bottom of the basement, just realizing that you're already giving something, even if you haven't identified clearly how that will impact people long term. Because it's always going to be unfolding.
Yeah. That's amazing and so powerful as well, because it sort of in a way takes the pressure off to find that. As you say before, it sometimes feels like it has to be this all encompassing or heavenly moment, you know, when the heavens part and you hear it, you hear angels singing, and it's like, yes, I've found it. But sometimes it can just be as simple as that. That's awesome. And you gave us a quick synopsis there a minute ago of sort of the journey you went on, and you know, we sort of quickly stepped over the work that you did. So to have gone from, you know, being this sort of, as you said, you know, well, what people might class as a, you know, well-rounded individual, and from what you described, you know, it's the type of person that people would say, oh, you know, he's going to go far in life, because you were like, you know, that likable, high-performing individual. So when you took off to go on this journey and to change this path, sort of how did that sit with people, and then sort of how did you sort of reconcile that you no longer had to be, you know, that sort of people pleaser anymore?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. In rites of passage work, there's three phases that we define. The first is severance, so literally like severing a cord. That moment when I decided to leave was the beginning of my severance phase, of my really stepping into my manhood. Cause like I said, I had an amazing community. My whole family lives on the East Coast. I was born and raised in New Jersey, with the New York City skyline about 7 miles away. So I was choosing to leave all of that after having just spent 6 years getting a doctorate degree, only working for just under 2 years at my first job in New York City, making good money. So it was a highly unpopular choice, especially for the people who had invested in that version of my life story, especially my parents. You know, my mom was always pretty supportive, mostly just concerned from a mother's perspective, but it was really difficult with my dad. It was our archetypal mashing of the horns moment where, you know, the young buck pushes up against the stag. And we had our first big fallout where when I traveled, I didn't actually really talk to my dad for the first couple of months because I just needed to distance myself from that. So within my family, I think it was mostly just their concern because ultimately they just wanted the best for me and they had their idea of what that looked like. But I had to divorce myself of their thoughts, and I literally had to put physical space between us. With my friends in my community, it was more they just missed me. they didn't want to see me go. But it was funny because, we were all at a similar stage of life. We all felt that something within us as individuals and collectively needs to shift or change. We just didn't know what. I just happened to be the first person to say, hey guys, I just feel called to go this way. So I'm going to go. I love you. I miss you. They all wished me well. And soon after that, everyone started to begin engaging with their own process of leaving and going traveling. And I think it's just a necessary stage that we all have to go through. So to answer your question, it was a mixed bag. And for a lot of people, it was inspiring. With my family, it was really challenging. And I had I had all those conflicts that I said I was really uncomfortable with as a kid. I had to face off with them just because my message from inside was so powerful. It was completely illogical, but so compelling that I had no choice but to leave. And it was the first time I felt a lot of guilt because, I mean, all my parents had just helped me go through 6 years of college. And here I was saying, I'm not going to do that right now. Yeah. So even if they didn't, my dad never completely just stood me up and dressed me down, but I could tell they were like, what the heck, man? Like, we just helped you get this degree and you're just going to walk away from all this?
Yeah.
Couldn't help it.
Yeah. And so how are things now? You've sort of reconciled those and everything like that?
Yeah, especially the parent relationship, man. I think everybody, regardless of how much, I love both my parents. They're still together. They gave me so many opportunities. I'm not one of those humans who had a really hard upbringing. I grew up in middle class, always was able to do sports. I went to a private high school, got a really great education. So all of those privileges I definitely had. There's a lot of ways in which my life was challenging. You know, my parents also had very high standards for my performance. So it gave me a bit of a chip on my shoulder. I didn't know how to deal with failure because I stressed myself into performance. And that was the conditioning that I had. So I've had to unlearn that. So normal parental healing had to happen of separating myself from my parents' stories. Because I think that's, as a parent now, I notice I'm trying to do that consciously. Because otherwise we just impress our beliefs about the world and the way we need to be onto our kids before our kids are old enough to come up with their own ideas or beliefs. So I had to, that period of time was me separating from my parents and then figuring out what was true for me and then reconciling and coming back around and returning as, this is who I am. This is what I believe in. This is what I stand for. I have love for you. And I would say it was about 5 years of really smoothing off the edges, but just these past couple of years, I think we are able to get together and really just appreciate where we each are and our differences in beliefs, our differences in philosophies and values. Because a lot of them, the core ones are still the same. Family, growth, providing, taking care of your loved ones, giving back, being generous. Once you go a little bit out from there, we start to digress a little bit from our opinions.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Amazing. Yeah. I'd say there'd be a lot of, I'm sure there's some people listening that will find solace or consolation in that. Because I'm sure there was times when you were in the midst of this sort of reframing of all those relationships where it probably seemed, it was so fragmented, would it ever come back or how things were going to pan out? Yeah,
man. I mean, to realize that my parents were humans too, that was really awakening for me, that I held them on such a pedestal so that when I finally was old enough to see their humanity for what it was. It was shocking at first, disappointing also to see that, you know, my parents have their own issues that they've been dealing with. And mm-hmm. I've never appreciated as much as I did when I turned 30 and I had my son here at 2 years old. And I'm like, wow, this is where my dad was when he had me. This is how he must have seen the world. He had no clue what was going on. And ever since then, he's just been figuring it out. And so, and then enters compassion and forgiveness and realizing that I get to be my own human. I think every one of us can relate to that journey, regardless of, mm-hmm. I mean, if whether you had a really present or a really absent parent or anywhere on the spectrum, your parents influenced you. They gave you life, period. Mm-hmm. So that's, you can't separate yourself from that. Anything beyond it is, it's your own unique narrative. But it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be what you believed it to be. Like you said, you can reframe it. You can look at it differently and ultimately be grateful. I'm grateful for mm-hmm. everything that they gave me because it's challenged me to find my way.
Incredible. Yeah. And as you said a moment ago that I think it was something along the lines of you realized your parents had sort of just raised you based on, you know, the knowledge in summarizing, like the knowledge and understanding that they had, and they were sort of, and then I think it was you said, they started to impart their views before you had a chance to sort of come up with your own. So now that you being a father and having going through, this work now, how has fatherhood been different, say, to how it was for your dad, or even just how, what's your experience been so far?
Yeah, well, even though we're only 30 years separated, I'll speak about my father first. We have different mm-hmm. worldviews. You know, like I said, on a fundamental level, family, taking care of your kin, being generous, showing love, being kind, and integral, hardworking. I absolutely share those things. In that sense, I'm cut from the same cloth as my dad. Mm-hmm. When you start to color in the lines a little bit, you know, I was raised in the suburbs, no religious context or anything like that. Very loose religious context, I guess I would say. And, mm-hmm. you know, not much of a framework for belief or higher purpose or bigger picture, just what's right in front of me, getting an education and progressing. Whereas my wife and I, we've raised our son inside of a teepee in ceremony. Mm. We raised him around the elements, around fire. He was barefoot pretty much full time for the first 3 years of his life. And mm-hmm. So you can't, our job as a parent to a young child, I believe, is to create a foundation of values, really simple things that kids can understand. They can see, they can model, they can begin to take on. And my hope, my intention is that those will leave impressions on both my son and my daughter that will serve them. Mm-hmm. However they decide to fill in and color in the lines beyond that, I'm not in control of. I would love if it turns out a certain way, but I know that I got to be removed and detached from that because I remember what it felt like to be that young man trying to mm-hmm. separate myself from my parents' version of the world. So it's different in the sense that I'm raising my children differently than my parents raised me on a details level, on a heart, soul, big picture level. It's really not that much different, mm-hmm. but it takes a lot of awareness and intention to keep coming back to that because we live in a very fast paced, hectic world. If there's any parents who are listening to this, I didn't even ask you, I don't know if you're a parent or not, but
no, not, okay. not yet.
It's a tricky world, man. Tricky world to raise to raise children in. You know, what we have to do to provide for our families is not that it's any more or less difficult than what other generations of parents have gone through, but it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no reference for raising kids in a technologically advanced world that we remember or know of. So, it's a tricky job, but I think it's the most important one because that's all that's going to be left when I go is the future generations.
Yeah, absolutely. And just quickly there, when you said that, you know, there's no framework for raising kids in a technological world. So how do you, and that's sort of, you know, a topic of discussion. So how do you sort of navigate or manage that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'll preface this by saying that I have no judgments on any parent, because anyone who is a parent, you recognize how difficult it really is. So any parent that is raising their kid and showing their kid love and compassion in some way, I have a deep respect for. So to raise a kid in a technologically advanced world, the biggest thing is just trying to make it so that they're not so dependent and not so they don't learn how to cope with technology like so many of us do. I mean, I'm guilty of it myself. You know, my wife, we bring awareness to each other. Really, we call each other out on it all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh man. And of course our kids are watching that too. So limiting screen time. I mean, the mechanics of it is just trying to feed the other parts of their spirit that they're naturally oriented and inclined to. My son loves being outdoors. So does my daughter. So giving them as many of those experiences as we can, and trying to minimize their reliance on technology, but also not separating them completely from it, because it's very likely that they're going to have to learn how to interact with it. Who knows how long the technological wave is going to ride out for, but they're here and the tech wave is at its peak. So it doesn't seem to be slowing down yet. So they're going to, if I don't let them learn that language, then they might be at a disadvantage when they get older. So to be honest, man, there's no manual on it. I don't have the answer. All I know is what we're doing, and we're just trying to give them what has been consistent over time is the elements, the earth, the wind, air, fire, water, you know, those things, and having a good relationship with those things from an early age. That's what I wish I had as a child. So I try to keep it simple and focus on that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, amazing. Yeah, well, that's a great way to put it. That if you have the natural elements to counteract the technological elements, then it keeps the body in balance. Because we don't know the long-term effects of over screen time, too much screen time for any of us, but we sort of are starting to see how it impacts mental health, how it can impact hormonal imbalance in terms of all the radiation and the blue light exposure and things like that. So I think we have to definitely have as much time as you say, getting back out into the elements, out into nature, looking at fire rather than our blue light screens. And if we can do that, it'll definitely help to stem it, I think, for sure.
At least doing our best. That's all we can ever do.
Exactly. Yeah. And then to come back to after you've sort of had that journey and you've moved out to California, and when was it, did it sort of come to you that having had these ceremonies and rites of passage yourself, that you realized, well, this is something that's, you felt a calling to, or maybe you felt it was missing in the world? And when did that sort of start to come together for you?
Yeah, well, those two parts of my transformation, the men's circles and the rites of passage, they both entered my life at the same time in the same geographic region. So when I spent those 4 months traveling, I was all over the place. I was on the reservation down in New Mexico. I was up in Oregon, Nevada, all over California, which if you've ever been to California, you know that there's like five different states inside of one state here. Experienced a lot of different areas and cultures, but the two things I was looking for were both in the same Southern California region, just north of LA. And so you asked me, when did I realize that I wanted that was necessary, that something, a part of me giving back to the world? Really, the first year to 2 years, I was just soaking it all up because it was so new to me. I'd never ever set foot in a space where men could 1 minute be squaring off with each other and literally in not conflict, but pushing up against each other, we'll say, in a very, very masculine way. And then a few breaths later, embracing in tears. I'd never witnessed that in my life. So for the first year, the guys, they joke, because most of these guys are twice my age. And I'm sitting here 25 years old, like, what the heck is going on? I've never seen guys do this before. So I was really just taking it in. So my worldview at that point was very, very minimal. I was seeing, how does this apply and help me in my life? And over the next year to 2 years, it grew from there. Simultaneously, I got very interested in rites of passage and initiation while I was traveling. And then lo and behold, the last stop on my journey was visiting friends that I'd connected with who were older, who invited me to stay with them, and then also said, hey, there's this community that we're involved with called Condor Clan, and they do Vision Quest. Oh, what's Vision Quest? Oh, well, Vision Quest is when you go and fast for 4 days and four nights on a mountain to pray for a vision. Wow, I've never really had a vision before, but I'd love to engage with that process. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, my own process of going through Vision Quest and initiation and formalizing that literally the month before I got married to my wife was, so again, it was really those first two years was really my journey. And then from that point, especially once I came back from my Vision Quest, I was clear that I had something to give back now. I had asked for a gift, I'd received it, and I was learning as I went. It's not like I had it all suddenly magically appeared, but I knew that I wanted to give these experiences back because I was starting to see how unique it was to have that experience and how many people really needed it, especially my friends who were back home. My male friends who I'd grown up with, who I was looking at them and seeing the experiences I had and how much it would benefit them to have that themselves. Mm-hmm. So that was really, as you said, it started to grow. And then, you know, over the past 5 years, it's expanded into everything that you see that has become the Rising Man, where we've got literally men from all over the world participating in our fire circles. We've got guys from different countries flying in to come out and fast with us because they recognize the importance of having that and they don't know where else to get it. So it's still shocking to me how few men actually have the consistency of circling up with guys, the safety of a space where they know nothing's going to leave that space, and the practice of shedding the mask and showing other guys what they're experiencing beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. It's still less than 1% on this planet, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's getting better, but it's still a fraction of a percentage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible. And then for you in your experience and your definition, what are, you know, the benefits to guys to have that sort of experience and to have those circles in their life?
Yeah, I use the word medicine a lot. So whenever I say the word medicine, I just think, equate that to anything that's good for you, anything that's going to help with your healing. Mm-hmm. So I say that the first medicine for men is relatability, to really see and experience this. I am not unique. I am not alone in how I feel. I'm not alone in my beliefs about myself. I'm not alone in my perspectives about the world, because that's the source of so much of our suffering, is experiencing those struggles, those challenges, and thinking that we're the only person going through it just because we've never talked about it, because I've never actually spoken that out loud and shared it. Thankfully, there's so many media sources and outlets now where a lot more people are being transparent and vulnerable and coming forth with their experience. A lot of high profile celebrities and athletes are starting to acknowledge their mental health struggles. And I think that's empowering people to be in this conversation now. But until you actually sit down with somebody who's real flesh and blood, and you can look in their eyes and you can see and feel their tears in their heart telling you how hurt they have felt, how much pain they're experiencing in this moment, and see yourself in them, that healing hasn't really happened. Up until that point, it's all words. It's not an embodied experience. So I think that's really when the shift takes place, is when you finally are in that physical environment where you can look across the screen even at somebody else who's, you can tell. You don't have to be some sort of master practitioner of this stuff to feel when somebody's being genuine. Somebody's being genuine and they've got real tears coming down and they're telling you about the traumas or the pains that they've had in their past. You know it, you feel it, and it activates some part of you. That's what separates us from a lot of other species, is our empathy, our ability to empathize and to feel across cellular boundaries. And so when we start to do that, it reminds us, oh, wow, this feels really good. And from that point, then there's a whole cascade of things that become possible. But to me, that's the beginning of it all.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. And say for as you said, you have you know, people coming from all different parts of the world, but say for someone that has listened to this for the first time, or maybe sort of hasn't had the courage to step forward and to do something like this, how do you get those people to maybe overcome that fear, or to say well, how might they? They know it's going to be too confronting, so they've just sort of avoided it for so long. How can they overcome that?
You know, it's tricky, man, because a lot of women often ask me that question: how do I get my husband or my boyfriend to sign up for one of your things? And I'm like, well, number one, that's the wrong way to approach it, because I know if my wife told me to do anything, I would do the opposite. It's kind of the ironic relationship that we have with our partners. So what I've realized is that my job is simply to light the fire and to fan the flames enough so that men can see it. Let the men know that this is available, and to speak to the experience that I have had internally myself and that other men have had internally. Because as soon as I start talking about not knowing what my life was about, I remember what it was like to sit in my apartment in New York City and to roll up a spliff, roll up a joint, and smoke it, and to feel like, damn, I'm doing this all over again. It's like Groundhog Day. I have no clue what comes after this. Does this ever end? Is this the only thing that I am capable of doing at this point in my life? And the sheer amount of fear and desperateness I had to find something to illuminate me, that's something that I know someone, even if it's one person listening to this, that they'll relate to that. Maybe you're not currently there. Maybe you are, but you'll relate to that. And you'll hear that in my voice. And maybe that'll get you interested. Ah, this guy he's saying something that I can relate to. I want to hear more. So that's my way of inviting people into it, is saying, hey, here's something maybe you can relate to. Now, if you want to go a little bit deeper and maybe even share your experience so that other people can let you know how ununique you are, then here's where you can join us. But you can't drag anybody to the fire. I've tried that before. I made that first mistake with my younger brother. Before I was even in a position to serve in the way I am, I thought I knew some things, and I started trying to tell him what to do. And he did the opposite, because we can't, again, going back to what we said before, you can't rob somebody of those lessons. That's what they're karmically here for. So doing so, that's just a huge ego trip. That's just me thinking that I know better. That's a good moment for me to check myself. Do I really know better? I don't pretend to know. I'm not the higher power here. I might be able to see something and shine light on it, but that's his decision. That's between him and spirit to figure that out. I'll just play my role in whatever feels good inside of me at that moment. But yeah, I made that mistake with my younger brother, and I made that mistake a couple times with guys who came to me looking for stuff, and I was, well, this is the way, because this is what I did that worked for me. And it's not always like that. We gotta figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they've got to go and find what works for them. Yeah, because that was something that sort of came to mind when you said about when you first sort of started to formulate the idea of this might be an area that you'd work in. You know, you thought of so many of your friends and people you knew that that could benefit from this, and that's sort of our first reaction is like we find something new and we go to our like immediate circle and we're like, oh, this is what you got to do, and that can have that effect, as you mentioned, that it's sort of actually they do the opposite. Because I remember a sort of similar experience with coming to veganism, and I was discovering all this amazing life-changing benefits from a plant-based diet, and I'm like, oh, I can, that's this person and that's that person. And then I like try and bombard them with information, and it had a bit of a polarizing effect for a while, until I sort of started to change my approach a little bit and just sort of live it and sort of share the message in a bit more of a softer way, but more in a way of that, like, well, I'm just sort of providing you this information. If you want to do it, I'm happy to give you more, but if you don't, well, then we'll just continue on being friends or whatever the relationship may have been.
Yeah, I mean, we're an odd species, modern humans, first world humans. We're a really interesting breed of humans, because we often need to get beat with the same thing over the head, almost to the point of dismissal from life. A lot of us have to hit that rock bottom. The fact that rock bottom is even a term, rock bottom doesn't exist with other species because they can't afford to put their survivability at risk that much. We've just created such a cozy living that we can afford to smoke ourselves and drink ourselves and eat ourselves nearly into oblivion before we say, oh, I'm almost dead. Okay, now time to change. Mm-hmm. You know, animals in the wild, they can't afford to do that. Their lives are far more simple too. So it's really fascinating when you look at this, you're like, why would any living being expose themselves to so much suffering? It's really a choice. You know, this whole victim mentality of like, oh, all the stuff that's happening in my life is so bad. Da, 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 da. We're choosing all of it. We're literally choosing it every single day. I don't care. I've heard enough sob stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had my share of sob stories too. We're choosing all of it. Pain is inevitable. It's going to hurt. Life is going to hurt. That's accept that. Accept that it's going to hurt because it hurts for everyone. Every single one of us, we experience pain. We experience a lot of things, but one of them is pain. Suffering. And that's the choice. There's a lot of people who experience great pain, but they're not suffering. So, you know, another thing I like to talk a lot about is, you know, judgment. Even in what you're saying about the veganism, it comes from a good place, right? You want good for other people. But within that, when we do that, because I do that too, there's an air of judgment about it. Mm-hmm. And judgment is like poison for relationship. It tells somebody that you think you're better than them. And nobody wants to be in a relationship with somebody like that. So I found that the antidote to judgment, my judgment, is curiosity. Interesting. Interesting that you drink so many sugary beverages every day. Why is that? What do you get from that? Genuine curiosity, not like a condescending, well, what do you get from that? Mm-hmm. You know, even the tone of voice is different. So yeah, man, I mean, coming off our high horse too, especially folks that are probably listening to a podcast like this, when you've seen the light and found the way, look back in your rearview mirror, because those people that you left in your wake, they're not there for you to save them. They're there to teach you, to keep teaching you that you're just another human on this planet. None of us are God's gift to the world. We're all humans trying to survive. Same game. Same game, just different details to the story.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because yeah, when we and that sort of brings it back to that empathy that you spoke of in the beginning. And if we can remember that, and that everybody that we see around us is all going through our own different journeys of trying to figure it all out. Yeah, I think definitely empathy is a big thing that we all and yeah, I mean I try and practice it as much as I can, but you know, none of us are perfect, and there are times where we're maybe not as empathetic as we should be. But yeah, if we just always keep it as something to remember and to try and live a bit more, definitely go a long way.
Yeah, and the willingness to be proven wrong also, and to learn something, goes right along with that curiosity. What I'll say this really briefly because I don't want to go too far into it, but I'm one of those people where I see all the 11-11, 3-3-3, 4-4-4 universal alignment posts, and I'm like, what a crock of you know what? Because to me, I see that and I'm just like, this is numbers and people playing with numbers and making meaning out of it. So I make fun of it, you know, mostly in jest, but also because I'm just like, how can this possibly be serving people? But I'm also open. I said the other day, I was like, you know what? Maybe they've got it right. Wouldn't it be funny and ironic if at the end of when the Enlightenment came in, everybody who was playing around with numbers and patterns found their way down the golden road to bliss and joy. And I'll have the biggest, you know, wow, I told you so moment. and you know what? I'm open to that if that's the case. But at the same time, I, you know, be lighthearted and be playful in my jesting and, you know, everyone's entitled to their beliefs. That's all good.
Yeah,
that's a little insight into my process. I found myself judging people for their spirituality, and I'm like, wow, that's not a very spiritual way of being.
For me,
yeah. For me, it's not a very, you know, to judge people about their beliefs. It's like, come on, that's not who I am on a core level. What's that about?
Yeah. And sometimes, I think that's a bit of human nature as well, that sometimes we can have that reaction to, you know, perhaps to something that we don't understand, and sort of maybe rather than trying to gain an understanding, it can be just easier to sort of have that approach. But also then you can just sort of go, oh, well, that's, you know, that's their beliefs, and I'm accepting of that. And until such time as I know more about it, or I'm willing to know more about it, let them go about it themselves.
Yeah, man. And, yeah. And like the Greeks and the Romans used to do, man, the word dialogue comes from the root of literally running back and forth. When they would have these councils, and when democracy was being created, they would have these great debates. And they would go back and forth on things. They never had to come to an agreement. They were mostly philosophers, because they had the luxury of philosophizing. So I am willing to have a dialogue with anybody about this stuff. If there's somebody listening right now about anything, I love to engage in conversations, because so far, nobody has told me something that actually has flipped the switch and made me look at it differently, especially specifically with this. But I'm always open to that. That's how I run my life, of not knowing, being in a beginner's mindset. I might be missing the whole point. I don't think that I am. Until proven otherwise, I'm going to continue walking the way I'm walking, but I'm always open to learning something new. Because if I wasn't, then I'd still be living on the same block that I grew up in back in New Jersey, doing the same things that my parents did and that my friends that I grew up with are still doing. Mm-hmm. And that was not the life I came here for. So,
yeah. Yeah, and as you mentioned there about like understanding the other person's perspective, because sometimes in discussions or, you know, quote unquote, arguments, that can tend to just get into, this is my opinion over your opinion, and it's whoever is sort of into submission first. But I think you can have a discussion and not to have to say, you know, if I'm having a discussion, until I'll keep going until you see and accept my point of view, as opposed to point both of us, you can go, okay, well, I see your point of view. And I understand why you have that point of view. It's not something that I sort of agree with. And then you're like, okay, well, we can still continue with another discussion, or continue to have a relationship, or it's not like, you know, we can't be friends anymore because of it. I think, that was something that I had to learn as well. And it also gave me a curiosity of, you know, if somebody had maybe a polarizing opinion about something, I like, okay, well, where did that come from, or what's formed that? And I'm like, okay, well, I understand that now, and I can see you're valid in that. I don't hold that opinion, but I can respect you for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
man, 100%. That was one of my first lessons from one of my first teachers when I traveled west, was there's big T and capital T and little T when it comes to truth. You know, capital T is reserved for facts, things that are irrevocably true. You know, you can't deny. You can't deny that this is truth, because we've all agreed that this is so. Everything else, which is the vast majority of things that we say, is lowercase t. It's what's true for me. Mm-hmm. And as long as you honor what's true for me and I honor what's true for you, then we can still be in relationship. But as soon as that stops, as soon as we need to be right, then there's no relationship. And that, to me, it's one of the most fundamental things, especially when you look at the world the way it is right now, when different political agendas, different religious agendas, the whole gamut of it is all because we're not making room for everyone to have their truth, everybody to believe what they believe. And there's also a lot of humans on this planet. So that's a lot of beliefs. You got to have fortunately, the Earth is still pretty big. It can contain all these beliefs. But we've compartmentalized and consolidated our existence in a way that makes it very tumultuous. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting time to be alive, though. I'll definitely say that. It's very fascinating, too.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Well, look, I think that's. I know you have to get on to your next appointment. I'll say thanks. Thank you very much for your time. It was a fascinating discussion. I'm sure there was lots of more we could have got into. Thanks so much, and enjoyed that.
Thank you, man. Yeah, honored to be a guest here, and thank you for what you're doing. I was looking into some of the episodes that you've created and some of the guests that you've had. You're doing a fantastic job, man. I remember being at that point too. So I just want to thank you for your commitment to it, because I know what it takes. I know what it takes to be on this journey. It's not easy to do this. Anyone who's listening, just recognize what he's doing is a service. It's a service. And so support this man, support his message. I can tell you're coming from your heart in a good place. And anytime I can help you out, brother, you let me know. It was an honor to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, Jetty, thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of your day. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. I loved this discussion with Jetty, and what really stood out for me is the need and importance of this kind of work in our world today. It doesn't matter whether you're male or female or however you associate, there's huge value in all of us breaking free from our unconscious patterns to live more in alignment with our higher selves. If each of us takes on that responsibility, it will then raise the collective vibration, and through that we will see cultural and societal shifts. It goes back to the age-old saying, if you want the world to change, you have to first change yourself. So let me know what stood out for you. I'd love it so much if you could leave me a review for the podcast on whatever platform you're listening. And if you'd like to follow up on Jetty, all the links will be in the show notes to today's episode. You can find him on Instagram at Jetty Azuma. Check out his podcast, The Rising Man Podcast, at Rising Man Movement and risingman.org. As always, if you enjoyed this episode or any other episode, share it with your friends and family in person or on social media. You can follow me on Instagram at The Pursuit of Enhancement for details of upcoming guests and other updates. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm so grateful that you choose to give of your precious time listening to this podcast. So that's it from me for now. I'm Peter Ledwidge. This is the Pursuit of Enhancement podcast. I'll catch you on the next one. In the meantime, remember to work hard, be kind, stay humble, and smile often.